is that the cost of insurance has gone up in a significant way. It's not just a small line item anymore. In fact, in some places, we're hearing increases of 200, 300%. And this can put an owner in a very difficult position. So insurance, the availability of insurance, and financing, those are probably the two biggest issues the industry is facing today.
Hi, this is Ted Kelly with another Ted's Hospitality Minute. Hey, today we've got a great guest on. He's a leader in the industry, and he's always watching out for the hospitality space on a broad schedule. His name is Chip Rogers. He is the president, CEO of American Hotel and Lodging Association, better known as AHLA. And he's going to come on and chat with us a little bit about the state of the industry, things that's affecting the industry, and things that we need to keep in front of us on our radar. Hey, Chip, how are you?
Ted, it is always good to be with you, and thanks for having me back.
Always a pleasure to have you because you're always so informative and you're kind of like the watchdog for the hospitality space. I mean, you're always out there in front and you're keeping the issues, you know, on a national level for all of us to kind of make sure we're ringing the bell on our local representatives to make sure they're supporting us.
Yeah, it's so important. I mean, I ask this question. I've been doing this for like, 15 years, asking people one simple question. And no one ever gets it wrong, so I'll throw it out to your audience as well. The question is, do you believe over the next 10 years that government is going to become smaller, less intrusive, and less influential or impactful on your life or your business? And no one, you know, everyone agrees with that. They know government's getting larger. So the question is, from the hotel industry, what are we doing about it? Are we going to sit on the sidelines and just say, you know, do whatever you want to do, make whatever policies you want to make, and we'll just work with it? Or do we proactively get involved to do the two things that we do at AHLA every day, which is to protect and promote our industry? And when we're united, when the entire industry comes together, we have an amazingly powerful voice. When we're separated, when we're not worried about certain policies or not informed about certain things, then that's when danger happens. And so we like to stay ahead of it. You see me out giving these type of speeches and these type of at events and doing podcasts and webcasts all the time, really just to spread that message is let's stay united. We'll help craft the message. We need everybody behind us, and then we will protect and promote the industry the best we can.
Wow. And so true, because I think the last time you and I spoke, I think we were in the heat of battle with COVID and you were fighting tooth, nail, and hand, whatever you could get to try to make sure that our government was trying to figure out ways to help support our hotel ownership group that all of a sudden went from a feast to zero. And you were trying to get all types of funding to support these guys and help keep their doors open and things like that, man. So kudos to you for that. And then very quick question. How do you think things are now? Are we post-COVID? Are we clear and things are rolling, or what's your thoughts there?
Still some challenges, and I don't know that they are directly COVID-related. Maybe they are when you start thinking about why do we have inflation? Why are interest rates so high? It's because we flooded the market. Probably maybe we did one extra or two extra funding levels that weren't necessary. But you mentioned it a moment ago during COVID, if you go back, you know, we had PPP and we were actively involved in the creation of PPP and the creation of the Flexibility Act that allowed you to have a much longer time to spend those PPP dollars and so that they would not be a loan, but in fact be a grant. But, you know, it's kind of what we do. If you think about it, the second round of PPP funding, hotels and restaurants got 40% more than any other industry. Now, the reason we got 40% more is because we lobbied Congress. It wasn't like Congress just said, hey, you know what, let's just give hotels 40% more. No, we explained to them day after day after day how much our industry had been hurt and what type of help we needed. And they responded by allowing access to more PPP dollars. So that's a really good example of kind of what we do. But as we look at where we are today, a couple of things that I think about, and these are the things that occupy my mind every day. First, the hiring problem, while still a problem, is getting better. I was with a whole host of CEOs in our industry just earlier this week, back on Monday afternoon. And we were talking about that hotels are not having nearly the problem they had in finding people. Now, retention is still a challenge, no question about it. But the number of people coming back into work has improved dramatically. Not to where we need it to be, but much better than where it was. Two things that I think are really on the mind of operators right now. One, interest rates. Anybody that has debt that needs to be refinanced is looking at a whole different world than the last time you financed it. Because as you know, debt service is one of the single biggest items that you will ever pay as a hotel owner. And recognizing that you're going to have to finance that debt at probably twice the rate that you had just 4 to 5 years ago, that is very problematic. It's also why transactions in the hotel industry have significantly slowed. That's not a good thing. You want transactions to accelerate so that hotels are being put to their best use and with an owner or a new owner that really wants to take them in a different place. So that is one thing that is causing some serious challenges. The second one is something that hasn't been on the radar, wow, forever, but it is now, and that's the cost of insurance, especially in places on the coast. So whether you're in California, whether you're in Florida, maybe some of the places in North Carolina, you recognize that the cost of insurance has gone up in a significant way. It's not just a small line item anymore. In fact, in some places, we're hearing increases of 200, 300%. And this can put an owner in a very difficult position. So insurance, the availability of insurance, and financing, those are probably the two biggest issues the industry is facing today.
Wow. And there's another one that I want to ask you about. But before I do, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor real quick. This episode is being sponsored by Recoverit. If you've ever experienced a home fire, a tornado, or hurricane, you know how easy it is to lose everything overnight. Well, the Recoverit app, the new app, it allows you to record everything in your home, store it in the cloud for easy retrieval should disaster ever strike. Now you can recall everything in your home, your valuables, your jewelry, your heirlooms, and you're in a better position, to settle with your insurance company should that happen. Check out Recoverit today. If you click the promo code on the screen, you'll get a 50% discount. And as usual, we always ask all of our viewers to please like us here on LinkedIn, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and this episode with Chip, you'll be able to catch also on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And as always, we appreciate your comments and feedback. But Chip, let's talk a little bit about some other activity that's going on. I think this Joint Employer Act, I read something about that and I was looking at it and I said, man, that's a good question for Chip, because I'm sure he's probably all over it and he can tell us a little bit about what's going on with that.
Well, you know the saying, an answer in search of a problem, that is exactly what joint employer is. The worst possible answer you could come up with in search of a problem that does not exist. So what joint employer does is it creates this new definition of who is the employer of the employee. And by the definition joint, as you can tell, it's more than one person, which is ridiculous. No employee wants more than one employer. But it really applies almost exclusively to the franchise model. So whether it's a restaurant, a hotel, a haircut place, a muffler shop, this theory that has been created by the National Labor Relations Board says that a franchisor and a franchisee jointly employ the employees of the franchisee. Now, anyone in the franchise business realizes that is ridiculous. And you ask yourself, okay, who wants this? Like, why would they even come up with this? Because franchisors don't want it. It's a nightmare for them. Franchisees don't want it. It's a nightmare for them. No employee has ever gone to the federal government and said, you know what? I got one boss. I'd really like to have two. So there's none of the interested parties want this to happen. So who does want it to happen? Organized labor. Now, why does organized labor want it to happen? Well, right now, if I want to unionize your Starbucks or your McDonald's or your Marriott hotel, I've got to go to that individual business, that workplace, and I've got to convince the employees in that workplace that being in a union is better than not being in a union. That's the way it's always been. Under joint employer, though, if all the employees in the entire Marriott system or all the employees in the entire Starbucks system or McDonald's system are jointly employed by the franchisor as well, well, then I don't have to go store by store. I can just unionize everybody at once, which is exactly what they want to happen. Now, in most major markets, taking a hotel, and this is why it's so important, taking a hotel from a non-union property to a union property represents about a 30% loss in value. So think about it from an equity standpoint. I'm an owner. Maybe I have 25%. Maybe I have 30% equity in my property. The rest is debt. Hotel goes unionized. Now, all of a sudden, all of my equity value has been wiped away. It is gone. So you understand why we're so adamantly opposed to this. Again, it's a solution, bad one, in search of a problem, because nobody that's actually involved in this system, franchisor, franchisee, or hotel employee, is even asking for this to happen.
Wow. Wow. So really, if nothing else, the call to action from this episode is that we need all of our local hotel owners contacting their local representatives to let them know that they're 100% against this.
Yeah, what we really need more than anything is contact your U.S. senator, particularly if you're in a state that has a Democrat senator. Now, we have bipartisan legislation, Republican and Democrat, in the Senate that would get rid of this. But we've got to have 60 votes. All the Republicans are in favor of getting rid of it. Joe Manchin, Democrat from West Virginia, is also in favor of getting rid of it. We've got to have 8 or 9 more Democrats to join this. So you need to call, if you have a Democrat senator in your state, call them and say, look, I'm a hotelier. I'm a franchised hotel owner or operator. You're going to destroy, literally destroy the value of my business. Please do not do this. If a local union wants to unionize a hotel, go to the hotel, make the case to the employees of that specific hotel. If you can't do that, then it shouldn't be a union shop. If you can do that, then it should be a union shop. This isn't about whether you make the case well enough. This is about protecting the individual franchisees and the franchise itself from what could be a massive destructive force on the industry.
Wow, that's amazing. And that's, again, kudos to the AHLA for keeping this issue out in front on a national level, because a lot of times some of us, as smaller guys, you know, we're in our own little world with our day-to-day stuff, and we're just trying to make sure that things are moving in the right direction in our own little backyard. We're not looking up all the time and saying, hey, you know, what's going on this with this issue? So again, kudos to the AHLA group for keeping that out there. Are there other issues, Chip, that we need to be aware of that keep in front of us on our radar?
Well, you know, the industry's wrestled quite some time about the explosion of short-term rentals. And, you know, we have always had the position that short-term rentals are part of the lodging industry. We represent the lodging industry. So that's perfectly fine. In fact, many members of AHLA are actually in the short-term rental industry. Marriott Hotels, for example, does short-term rentals. Choice Hotels does short-term rentals. Sonder, who only does short-term rentals, is a member of AHLA. So these organizations, these companies have done it, and they've done it the right way. Unfortunately, there are some in the short-term rental industry that want no regulation at all. Now, if you live in a local residential neighborhood and a hotel came in and said, you know what, we're going to tear down the house next door to you and we're going to build a hotel there, and you're just going to have to live with it. The noise, the guests, the traffic, you're just going to have to live with it because it's private property. We should be allowed to do whatever we want to do with private property. That is the position of those who want no regulation. And so what we're saying is that no, residential areas in neighborhoods should be residential. Commercial areas can and should be commercial areas. However, even in a commercial district, you should play by the same rules. If you had a Hotel A on one corner and Hotel B on the next corner, and Hotel A had no regulation whatsoever, no fire and safety, didn't have to worry about collecting taxes, didn't have to worry about construction requirements for building the building, and then across the street, Hotel B had to do all of that, who's going to be in a better position economically? Who's going to be in a better competitive position? Clearly the one that has no regulation. And so therefore, if you're going to enter the hotel industry, the lodging industry, and compete with lodging across the street, just play by the same rules. It really is that simple. Now, people think about some of these short-term rentals, Airbnb, for example, as just some mom and pop renting out their unit. You know, that's cute. That's the way it was 15 years ago. That's not the way it is today. Most of these rentals are owned by large corporate interests, generating tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars per year, per unit. Those are businesses, and that's okay. We celebrate businesses. We encourage businesses. Just play by the same rules. Have a level playing field with your competition.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense there. Quick question for you. I saw a hearing, and they were talking about the Hotel Responsible Stay Program and the success of that. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so look, consumers, actually, let me back up and kind of walk you through the timeline. If you went back about 5 years ago and asked, who cares about the sustainability practices of a hotel operation? It might be some activist investors who say, I don't want to invest in this hotel company because they don't have sustainable practices. If you went back about 3 years ago, you'd start to see more of those investors, plus meeting planners who are saying, look, we're not going to take events to hotels that are not involved or not using sustainable practices. And then if you go back just like 12 months ago and ask the question, now who cares? It's activist investors, it's meeting planners, and it's the general traveling public. People that are booking hotels are saying, we want to know if that hotel is practicing sustainably or sustainable practices, whether it comes to energy, water, food waste, sourcing, all of that is important. So we created Responsible Stay to bring the industry together, to coalesce around some general ideas of what it means to have a sustainable operation, because we want that to be able to apply to a small, independent mom and pop hotel, maybe with 20 rooms, all the way up to a 2,000-room luxury resort. I mean, all the way up and down the scale, we want to make sure that there are baselines of what we're going to do as an industry so that we can communicate that to the general traveling public who have now said this is a concern for us. The second thing that we're doing here at HLA is we've just created a joint venture, a partnership with our friends at the Hotel Association of Canada. So now for all North America, that includes Canada, the U.S., Mexico, and the Caribbean, we have a product that is called Green Key Global. Green Key Global is a third-party certification system that looks at the practices of an individual hotel and rates them from one key up to five keys on how sustainable those practices are. If we're able to standardize this, which is really what we want, we're working with brands now to kind of get this to be the preferred brand standard for certification. But if we're able to accomplish that, it then communicates to the traveling public, the consumer, to say, hey, I understand what Green Key Global is. I understand it's applied to all hotels. And now I can compare Hotel A to Hotel B. That will encourage both hotels to continuously up their game when it comes to sustainable practices. We think that is important. We think we can move the industry in a very positive way towards a more sustainable operation if, in fact, we can have a standardized third-party certification, which is what we believe Green Key Global is.
Wow. And it makes sense. And I think it's the right direction to go in, just from the overall environment perspective anyway. So I'm glad to see that movement has steadily progressed to the place where now it's like it's very important as opposed to being, it'd be a nice to have. Now it's very important for folks to have that. So that's awesome. THM viewers, this episode is being sponsored by Recover-It. If you've experienced a home fire, tornado, or hurricane, you know how easy it is to lose everything overnight. Well, Recover-It is a new app that allows you to record everything in your home and store it in the cloud for easy retrieval should disaster strike, versus you trying to recall all of the household valuables and jewelry and heirlooms in your home. And it allows you to settle up with your insurance company a lot faster. Check out Recover-It today and use the promo code on the screen to get a 50% off discount. And as always, we always like to remind our viewers, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us here on LinkedIn, and this episode with Chip will be available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and we always appreciate your feedback. But Chip, talk a little bit about 2024. What do you think 2024 is going to be like for the hospitality industry?
I think we'll continue to see maybe a stabilization of the leisure travel. I think we're probably where we're going to be for quite some time. That pent-up demand has been exhausted, so we're going to be back to normal rates there. I think you're going to continue to see group improve. In fact, you could say small group is already back to where it was, if not better than 2019. And large group continues to improve each and every day. It's always important to remind people, some of these large citywide conventions take 3 to 4 years to plan, and so they're all coming back online. So all of that, I think, is really good. I still have concerns about inner city business travel. We need people back in the office. I'm sitting here in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and all of the government employees aren't even back yet. Simple things. Somebody was mentioning to me the other day trying to get a simple patent approved or trademark approved, actually. And they're like, well, the trademark office, no one really works there anymore, so it's 10 times longer than it used to be. You know, our federal government needs to get back to work. I mean, this is a joke. The pandemic's been over for quite some time. I recognize if you're a federal government employee that maybe the standards are different than private sector, but you know, you're getting paid, get back to work, get back in the office. The administration needs to demand people to get back in the office. And that will help our inner city hotels, not just here in Washington, D.C., but other places as well. And so I think the trend is going back towards where we were. If you were to say, will 2024 from a adjusted for inflation RevPAR standpoint be as good as 2019? It'll probably be very close. Now, this is all regional, you know, depending on where you are. Look, there have been major shifts in businesses. There have been major population shifts just over the last 5 years. If you look particularly around the Southeast, there was a great Wall Street Journal article the other day that said the Southeast has much greater business activity than the Northeast does. So the world has changed. Our country has changed. And so depending on where you are, things are probably much better than 2019. But if you're in Minneapolis, if you're some of the places in the Northeast, if you're on the West Coast, San Francisco, Portland, you may still be struggling. So the recovery really depends on where you are. But in general, if you took everything and put it together, 2024 should be at least as good as 2019, even on an inflation adjusted basis.
Wow. And if we could get the interest rates to come down a little bit, probably things would be a lot better faster, right?
Yeah, that's helping a lot. I mean, as I mentioned a moment ago, the exchange of properties, whether it's residential real estate or commercial real estate, but particularly in our industry, is a good thing. You want there to be velocity of exchange. You want someone to look at a property and say, you know what, I can make it better. I can make it perform better. I can fix it up. And when you have high interest rates that are preventing the sale of property just because of the interest rate, that's not a good thing. And so we definitely need those to come down to get that velocity moving again.
Right. Yeah, that is awesome, man. Well, Chip, it's been great speaking with you today. I mean, I always love catching up with you and kind of getting a view from the top and you kind of dropping the tidbits on the things that, you know, we have to keep on our radar, even though we've got our own little kibbles and bits that we're working on down here in a low level. You know, you always seem to bring the national perspective on things that's affecting the industry as a whole. And I think that's great for our viewers. And I think that's great for our industry. So we appreciate all the work that you and the AHLA does. And obviously, I leave the door open with you all the time. So if you ever want to come back, you know, you just let us know and we'll have you back.
I will do so. And Ted, always good to see you. Enjoy your holiday season. And thanks for all you do for our industry.
All right. Thank you, too. Hey, this has been another Ted's Hospitality Minute. Please remember to like us on LinkedIn, subscribe to our YouTube channel. And this episode with Chip will be available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And as always, we always appreciate your feedback. You guys have a great day, and we will see you next time.
Ted's Hospitality Minute is sponsored by Recoverit. Don't wait for disaster to happen to wish you had done this.